Lisa Davis, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Joining us now is Temple Grand, and the best-selling author, animal scientist, and autism advocate, to talk about her upcoming HBO film, Temple Grandin, starring Golden Globe winner Claire Danes as Temple. Temple Grandin paints a picture of a young woman's perseverance and determination while struggling with the isolating challenges of autism at a time when it was still quite unknown. The film chronicles Temple's early diagnosis, her turbulent growth and development during her school years, the enduring support she received from her mother, her science teacher, and her emergence as a woman with an innate sensitivity and understanding of animal behavior. Undaunted by educational, social, professional roadblocks, Grandin turned her unique talent into a behavioral tool that revolutionized the cattle industry and laid the groundwork for her successful career as an author, lecturer, and pioneering advocate for autism and autism spectrum disorder education. Temple, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
It's great to be here.
Temple, I am so honored to have you. I just absolutely loved the movie. I thought it was fantastic. And I'm wondering, Temple, how involved were you in the making of the film?
I read a lot of the scripts. I spent a good deal of time with Claire Danes, and one of the things I really loved in the movie is all my projects were built according to all the original drawings.
Oh, that's terrific.
And the thing I really liked in the movie was, you know, emphasis how a good science teacher helped me. There are a lot of kids that are kind of, you know, mildly on the autism spectrum, some of these Asperger kids that are sort of losing their way. And a good teacher can really, really turn them around.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Carlock was so incredible. And it was so obvious that he took your interest in science and used that to help motivate you.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you get these kind of quirky kids. You see, there's no black and white dividing line between mild autism, Asperger's, and geeks and nerds. In fact, you wouldn't even have a radio station if you didn't have engineers, you know, a little bit of those autism genes that... That'll keep your radio station running.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and my daughter's 5 and a half, and she has Asperger's, and she's brilliant and funny, and so sensitive and quirky, and she is in an integrated preschool program, and she absolutely loves her teachers, and it makes
good.
Such a difference.
Well, it makes such a difference, and you want to take their area of strength. One of the things is, you know, some of these quirky kids, they're good at one thing, they're bad at something else. Like, I'm a visual thinker, and
yes.
I discuss that in detail in one of my books, Thinking and Pictures.
Yeah.
They can photorealistic pictures, and they show that just absolutely great in the movie, how my mind works visually. Had a horrible time with algebra. Kids that are terrible at algebra, they can do geometry and trig. And then there's another kind of mind. It's more of a pattern mind. It's sort of more abstract, like chess and origami. And they're often very good at things like computer programming.
Mm-hmm.
And mathematics.
Yeah, you know, my daughter, and I wanted to ask about this, she has, I heard you in an interview on NPR, she remembers everything she ever hears. Like, she'll hear a full adult song once, and she'll remember it. She knows hundreds and hundreds of songs, books by heart, words, words, talks like she's 25, went to Harvard or something.
That's right, the little professor syndrome.
Yes.
And she might be an auditory thinker.
Yes.
I want to emphasize that not everybody on the autism spectrum is a visual thinker.
Okay, yeah, I don't think she is.
And she may be an auditory thinker. As opposed to a visual thinker, and may really get into music.
Yeah.
All I can say is develop her strengths.
Okay.
One of the big problems that we've got with these kids is, you know, she's a little young now at 5,
right.
But when they get up around, you know, 12 years old, we need to be thinking about what can this kid do when they grow up, you know, and there's not anywhere near enough emphasis put on, you know, careers. I also want to emphasize that autism is a very broad spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you got brilliant scientists, and in today's educational system, Einstein would probably be diagnosed as autistic.
Oh, definitely.
No language until age 3. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got kids that are much more severe. They're not going to learn to talk. They may even do really bad things like self-injure themselves, and they have to live in a supervised living situation. It's a very, very big spectrum. And there's no black and white dividing line between mild autism, geeks and nerds, and just being quirky.
Yeah, that's true. I know a lot of, I'm kind of quirky myself, so I know, I tend to have a lot of quirky friends. Now, you know, you mentioned about the film that they did you a good job of showing how you think in pictures, and I was going to ask you that because I loved how the movie opens and you say, it's so hot, do people live here? And then it shows like fire. And then there was also when you were talking with Mr. Carlock, your science teacher, and you were, that's when he really got how you were thinking, and you're talking about shoes, and you pictured, they showed all these different kinds of shoes that you pictured that you remembered. Is that really how it looks, the way
they
did it?
No, that's how I think.
Wow.
They come up like a series of slots.
Wow.
They came up a little bit faster in the movie than they would in my own mind.
Okay.
They come up a little bit more slowly, but they come up pretty fast. It's sort of like searching Google for pictures.
Yeah. I like that. Now, I want to say your mother was so amazing. I mean, at a time when you got diagnosed when you were 4, and I was so shocked that they called it infantile schizophrenia in the 1950s. If you can tell us about that.
Yes, they did.
That is terrible.
And that was just absolute rubbish. And then in the 60s, they went through the whole Bethlehem area where they blamed parents for causing autism, which is absolute BS. In fact, Bethlehem himself turned out to be a fraud, and that his real job was selling lumber in a lumber yard.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there's a book about that. And, you know, autism is a neurological disorder, you know, that the child's born with. There's a strong genetic basis, and it's very variable. And you see some of the quirky kids are not that social. That's just part of normal variation. Then you get into the more severe forms of autism. The child remains nonverbal. Some of those can learn to type independently, and they got a good brain hidden inside. And others have massive medical problems, epilepsy, all kinds of other terrible troubles along with it. To me, the continuum and genetic is a big part of it, but it's a continuous trait. There's no like autism gene. It's sort of like mixing paint. You know, you can have a little bit of another color added or a lot more added.
Yeah, well, what I really admired about your mother is, number one, she wasn't getting, you know, when the doctor said to institutionalize you, which is so horrible because you know obviously how many parents must have heard that and unfortunately probably did that, where she's so strong and she was just determined, and I just think she's amazing.
Well, mother did a documentary on mental retardation in the early 50s to one of the NPR channels.
Oh.
And she went into a ward where they had all these autistic kids just sitting in a room rocking.
Oh.
And she said, I can't ever let, you know, Temple get into that situation. She said it was just awful. She got off the elevator and they were all silent and rocking and doing nothing.
Oh, my goodness. No, she was just so incredible. And then I don't want to give too much of the movie away, but showed her working with you. And I loved when you were in the office and you were looking at the wall and the pattern on the wallpaper didn't really match, and then it showed how in your mind you matched it up.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly the kind of things I do when I'm in boring conventions. I'm looking at the patterns on the rug and how one doesn't quite match the other, and, you know, that's for very, you know, very boring stuff.
Yeah, you know, also in the film it shows, and I won't give this away, but, you know, you discover how deep pressure helps you feel calmer. You know, you have added so much. I mean, that's, you know, I took my daughter to occupational therapy, and I know other folks who have either, whether it's autism or sensory processing disorder, where, you know, deep pressure can really help. And that, you know, is thanks to you. And I know that you, people can get a squeeze machine that you design.
Well, also, they get a squeeze machine. I mean, the disadvantaged squeeze machine is expensive. There's a lot of simpler ways to do deep pressure in kids, you know, mattresses, rolling up in gym mats, you know, weighted vests. The thing is, deep pressure doesn't work on everybody.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't work for my daughter, but
it works
for other people.
It works for some other people. But the secret is, it's 20 minutes on, and then you've got to take it off for a while. Uh-huh. Otherwise, the nervous system habituates. And I want to emphasize that sensory problems in autism, dyslexia, and many other learning problems are very variable. One child will not be able to tolerate fluorescent lights because he can see it flicker like a discotheque. Another child, when the fire alarm goes off, it hurts his ears. Another child may not tolerate scratchy clothes. And these sensory sensitivities can vary from nuisances to totally debilitating.
Yes.
And I think there's a huge need for research on these sensory issues.
Yeah, there sure is. You know, one thing I loved about the movie as well is the cafeteria scene when you're in college. When I try to explain to people about my daughter and her getting overloaded by sensory things, the clanging of the knives, the chopping of the carrot, the people talking, and it was so well done.
That's the way it's like. And I had some people at one of the premieres say to me, well, is that, you know, you really, sensory really like that? I go, yes. And I think it's hard for, you know, people with normal sensation to imagine an alternate sensory reality where, you know, ordinary stimuli are just overwhelming. And You can also have got a lot more information on that in my book, Thinking in Pictures.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I try to explain to people, and I have other friends, too, who have kids on the spectrum or with sensory processing issues, and the grocery store is a big deal. It's colorful, it's loud, there's lots of people, there's lots of stuff to look at, there's smells, you know. It really can be overwhelming, so I want to show, I think everyone should watch this film. There's so much that you can learn. It was just so incredible. And I'm wondering, you know, I know that you talk in the film about you're explaining how to your aunt where a horse is looking based on where the ears are pointed.
That's right.
When did you first discover that about animals?
Well, I started observing animals, you know, back in the 70s. You know, I didn't instantly discover all these things all at once. You know, the movie's set in the 60s and the 70s, and I'm a lot more autistic, but some of the things, like the conveyor system, that actually was designed later on, but they had to time compress,
okay,
you know, some events. I actually discovered the ear-moving thing a little bit later on, but that was something that I discovered. And it gets down to observation, you know, just observing. And the autistic mind observes detail. Now, what I was doing in the movie, looking at the shadows and the chains hanging down, that was some of my very earliest stuff. That was some of the earliest stuff that I did, is everybody was forcing the cattle, and I noticed if there was a coat on a fence, they wouldn't walk by the coat on the fence. Take the coat off the fence, they walk by.
Yeah, that was what was so interesting. And you had to put up with so much, I'm going to say it, crap.
Oh, it was.
From those cowboys. My husband and I were watching the film, and we just felt so frustrated, and I thought, my gosh, this woman is strong, because that must have been so irritating. They were so
nauseous.
Just
terrible. I mean, the thing with the bull testicles, that actually happened.
And, oh, my God.
You know, it was a man's world back then, and now there's a lot of women that work in feed yards. In fact, some feed yards now prefer all-lady vaccination crews because they're gentler on the cattle.
Oh, that's good. And did that happen where you put that wonderful, you know, you created the dip thing? I don't know. I apologize.
Yeah, that,
I don't know. And they actually came and tore it apart. I mean, they just...
Well, they put the... That was recreated off my original drawings. In fact, the scene of all the guys at the very end around the drawings, those are actually my drawings they were looking at, the real drawings.
Wow, there's those.
And they put that dip pad off. It's a real dip pad that they built. They put a little bit in. I made them take that off, and you know, because the old dip bat thing was to make them slide in. And I find even now on some of my systems in the meat plants, they want to make them, you know, slide onto the conveyor. No, they walk onto the conveyor. I'm like putting welding cleats on, and they're packing them off. Still having problems with that.
Oh, that's frustrating. Well, I love how you say in the film, quote, nature is cruel, but we don't have to be.
That's
and when it showed the system how it, when it really, you know, when it worked, what you do work, excuse me, the cattle are just walking along, and they're totally calm.
Well, that's
and they
the way
have
it
no
is.
Idea, and then they get bonked on the head, but they have, rather than being prodded and pushed and scared and their adrenaline going, and it makes a lot of sense.
Well, you go into one of the big plants now, and that piece of equipment's only used in very, very large plants.
Okay.
You know, a little plant that, you know, a local walker plant's not going to use that. But if you keep everything calm, and I found you get rid of those distractions, the shadows, the chains hanging down, the reflections, and non-slip flooring. I find a lot of small plants, I put a non-slip floor in, I put up some solid sides so they don't see vehicles going by or some other distraction. Then they will walk in quietly. And I found that cattle will behave the same way in the veterinary chute as they behave at the slaughter chute when things are done right.
Yeah, that's good. And that's why it's so amazing that you were able to take that. And again, going back to Mr. Carlock and him getting you interested in science, and I'm not going to give away the image, but we were cracking up when you talked about, you were asking him, when he said, you should go to college, and we were like, well, why? And he said, well, can I study, I think he said cows or cattle. Animal husbandry. People have to see the movie. I'm not giving away that image. That was great. And at any rate, so that was really nice for you. And again, he was so caring, and when he tried to explain to the other teachers the way that you think in pictures, and they just, because at first they're like, oh, she's terrible at algebra, and she's terrible at French, and once he explained it, and then they said, okay, you work with her, and that was just beautiful.
Well, this is where a good teacher can just make all the difference in the world. I mean, I see a lot of young, like, you know, boys, teenage boys are getting in all kinds of trouble and things like that, and these are the kind of kids that can get really turned around with a really great teacher, and I'm really concerned about science education in this country. We need to get kids interested in science, and Mr. Carlock had all kinds of interesting things to do in his lab. You know, you got to remember this is 60s, so our idea of a good light show is you stretch a thin rubber over speaker and you glue mirrors on it, and then you reflect the light off it, and it bounces in time with the music. You know, and then he would get us to understand the science behind how that works, how the sound waves would move the rubber membrane.
So it sounds like your advice for parents, then, if they have a child on the spectrum, is you've got to get it, you know, the teachers are so important, getting in touch with what they're good at and helping foster that. What other advice do you have?
Well, foster that. Also, kids, I had to be taught turn-taking when I was very young.
Okay.
I'm awful about that. And the other thing is just things like basic table manners and things like that. I mean, my 50s upbringing helped me on that. I'm seeing too many atrocious table manners. I went out to dinner with a boy who was combing his hair with his fork at the table. You know, fully verbal kid.
I don't mean to laugh. I guess.
Another boy who tore up the gas station store. You know, this is a fully verbal kid. And when I was 8 years old, I could go shopping, and I knew the rules. You don't touch it unless you're going to buy it.
Okay. Oh, that's good. So even though they're having trouble, they need to learn what's okay and what's not okay.
Well, that's right, especially on things that impinge, that make things unpleasant for other people.
Yeah.
You know, and the store isn't going to want their goods damaged. You've got to take turns. That was pounded into me with board games when I was a child.
Oh, okay. And that helped?
Oh, absolutely. You've got to teach these kids to take turns. And that was done at a very, very young age. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of early educational intervention, and tons of it. But the other thing is a person on the spectrum can always keep growing. You know, someone says, well, I have a son, he's 25 years old and sits in the basement playing video games. And the video game addiction's a real problem.
Yeah.
Because when I was in high school fooling around at school and not studying, I was doing a lot of job-related things. I took care of the horse barn. I cleaned the horse stalls. I did a lot of carpentry work. I made signs. I mean, I was doing, you know, work-related things.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it is tough with kids today with all the technology. And, you know, it's interesting. On the way here, I was listening to something on the radio that was actually talking about the, you know, cyberbullying. And I know that you were teased a lot. I know that a lot of kids with these issues do get teased. Do you have any advice for helping parents help
teasing
their children?
Teasing was just absolutely horrible. High school was the worst part of my life.
Yeah.
The main thing I can recommend is get your kid involved with groups of kids that have shared interests, because the refuges away from teasing were model rockets, and the movie has bigger ones than the one we had. We had little tiny ones. And horseback riding and electronics lab. And when I was in those activities, there was no teasing. The students who were interested in those specialized things did not do the teasing.
That's true.
And I think it's very important to get these quirky kids into, you know, things. Maybe it'd be choir. Maybe it will be band. Maybe it'd be stage acting. You know, whatever. Some specialized thing. Or an art group or something. Where they be with people.
Shared interest is huge. I'm so glad you're talking about that. I mean, the teasing, I was just so saddened to hear that there's actually kids that are committing suicide because of bullying. And it's gotten so much worse with the technology. So when you were talking about the video games, even though that's a separate issue, but it made me think about technology, and that I know that you had gone through so much. And I worry about that, you know, with my little girl. I mean, she's very social. I mean, she's kind of unusually social. But still, kids can be cruel.
Oh, kids can be really nasty. And I think that some of these really intelligent, smart kids, I think they need, you know, socializing with teenagers is not a life skill I need. And that's when I got kicked out of school for throwing a book.
Oh, yeah.
Being the girl on the head with the book after she called me a retard. You know, some out in Silicon Valley, some of the parents just kind of apprentice these kids into the computer industry and they skipped that old high school thing. You know, I'm a big believer in mainstreaming little kids, elementary school kids, but there's some of these high school kids being tortured in school, and maybe they need to just take their high school equivalency thing online and go on and take classes at the community college and start working on career development. I'm a big believer, too, in teaching job skills young. That was done with me. You've also got to get these kids out and get them doing different things. Like, I didn't want to go to the ranch originally, and the mother made me go. It was the best thing she ever did.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I felt badly when she took you to college. Part of me is like, what is she doing? She's in these dorms with these girls, and all they talk about is boys and, you know, the music. And it's just going to be so hard for you to adjust. And I thought, but she's doing the right thing.
She's doing the right thing.
But I still felt like, oh, my goodness, this is...
No, but you see, the problem is you've got to push some. Now, obviously, I couldn't tolerate... Some people's sensory problems are so bad, they can't tolerate, you know, a big, noisy supermarket or a noisy nightclub.
Yeah.
You can't force them into something that's going to be sensory overload, but you've got to push somewhat. I talked to a mother just the other day that her boy went off to a boarding school that he picked, and he was doing okay, and he didn't want to go back, and she made him go back, and then he was okay when he went back. But if you don't push them somewhat into new experiences, they're not going to advance. You know, the trick is you have to push enough to make them advance, but not so much that they just freak out from sensory overload and other problems like that.
Yeah, and then they won't want to do it again because they're smart and they'll associate that this is going to happen again. It is a really fine line. It's really hard. I mean, we have that challenge with our own daughter. There's, you know, the change is a big issue, and you talk about that. That's shown in the movie that it's really hard to change. And I love the doors. I love how you walk through a door to get through to another part of your life or make a change. I thought that was wonderful. And speaking of the movie, how was it to meet with Claire Danes? I'm such a fan of hers.
It was wonderful. And when I first met Claire Danes, I said, how can Claire Danes turn into me? And that just shows what a brilliant actress she can be. She worked very, very hard on it. I gave her old VHS tapes of the oldest lectures and things that I had, because the thing about being autistic, as you get older and you get more experienced, you get less and less autistic acting.
Yeah.
And she worked really hard on that. When I saw her becoming me, and I did visit the set, it was like really weird. It was like going back in a weird time machine.
Oh, it must have been. If she doesn't win every award there is, I'm going to be upset, because I could not get over how amazingly she did.
You would never know it was Claire Danes if you hadn't read the credits.
That's true. It was phenomenal. I mean, the movie is not only is enjoyable, there's funny parts, there's sad parts, but I just wish everyone would see it, because it really is so amazing what your mother did for you and the things that you were able to accomplish because of the support that you received.
Well, it will be coming out in DVD eventually, and Future Horizons, that's a major autism bookseller that I've got two books with, they will be distributing it when it comes out.
Oh, I'm so glad. Now, it comes out February 6th, is that
the movie's going to come out February 6th, and then, of course, I'm not sure the DVD comes out a few months afterwards.
Okay. Now, we just have a couple minutes left. Temple, is there anything that you wanted to add that we didn't cover today?
Well, we talked about sensory issues, and obviously I like to talk about my books. Thinking in Pictures is one of my main autism books, and I also have another book called The Way I See It, main autism book, and I've got my animal books, too.
Well, I love animals, so...
Well, I got some great animal books, Animals in Translation and Animals Make Us Human.
Oh, the one thing I did want to ask about animals, I heard you on an NPR interview, and you were talking about how, you know, kids who have, on the spectrum, some who have savant skills, and you said that animals have some savant-like skills as well.
Well, animals are extreme sensory-based thinkers. I mean, an animal thinks in pictures, he thinks in smells. It's all detailed little information, and in Animals in Translation, I talked about that in detail, and you know, an animal oftentimes will get afraid of something that's associated... When he gets a hit, let's say, he'll associate that with the thing he was seeing or hearing right at the time he was hit.
I see. Okay, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I would love to have you come back on sometime to talk about your other books. I just loved speaking with you, and I know that everyone's going to really enjoy this interview. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, it's been great to talk with you.
Now, Temple, how can people learn more? Do you have a website or...?
Well, a livestock website. I have Grandin.com, my livestock website. The best way for them to learn more is get all my books, Thinking in Pictures in particular, and they're available in all bookstores.
All right. And everyone make sure to be friends with Grandin. That's fantastic. Now, in addition to my incredible Thursday morning lineup, which we'll be going, you can find on itsyourhealthradio.org, Mariel Hemingway will be joining us for a special live show on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, so be sure to tune in.